Hello and welcome to the first episode of Half Pint Ideas, presented by the Beer Fridge Podcast. I'm your usual Beer Fridge host in the form of Gavin, and my normal drinking buddy is alongside me. And Mark, how you doing, mate?
I'm very well, buddy. I'm very well. Looking forward to... I was a wee bit high-pitched, but no, I'm looking forward to it. I say it's something... I quite like this idea, and I'm hoping over the coming months we'll have some, I'm going to call them beer influencers, maybe, or people that are friends of ours working in the industry and are going to help us kind of tackle some of the kind of weirder and wonderful questions that maybe don't come up every week on our actual full-bodied podcast because, well, you know, we've got guests, we've got...
We like tangents.
Well, yeah, let's be honest. We kind of go off in mad tangents, don't we?
This is a series that's going to be exclusively available on YouTube and a part of our Patreon offering as well. Patreon members will see each episode first before anyone else. So if you want to do so, you can go to patreon.com/beerfridgepodcast and show your support and get exclusive content and not preview, early access. That's the word I was looking for. To this Half Pint Ideas, like I said, presented by the Beer Fridge Podcast. Slightly different, as Mark says, tackling like one or two questions at a time and just diving deep into them. And we'll get some guests on over the next couple of weeks, which should be pretty exciting. It's not going to be a weekly thing. This is going to be something every couple of weeks.
I would like to try and do... I'm going to just set the stall because we're recording. I would like to try and do one every 2 weeks. But if it ends up as a one a month and we do it properly, then I can make my peace with it. But the kind of the premise I had behind, like you said, was kind of tackling questions that I don't want to get into my day job, but at the same time, finding this balance between podcast Mark and work beer Mark is sometimes quite difficult. And there's stuff that come up on a like day-to-day, weekly, monthly basis that I think would be quite a cool topic, but at the same time, the podcast setting is so relaxed that I feel like it sometimes it might not land properly or we have a guest on and it's really difficult. I don't ever want to take the shine away from guests and what we're actually talking about. So for me, this is where this sort of sits. And yeah, it allows... The whole premise was basically we have half a pint and we discuss some. So it's the half pint ideas.
Talking about half a pint, let's figure out what that half pint is. It's, I say half pint, it's going to be a 440ml can in this case. But one thing we will bring over from the regular podcast is what we're drinking to start things off. Go for it. Are we doing the same beer here?
Yeah, I've just poured it. So I've got the Stuart Bruins Project 7 Series Under and Over the Oat Cream IPA, 6.5%, and it was brewed with Goodland. I've taken one mouth of it, to be honest with you, so it's you're getting the full experience of it. It's really pleasant. I would expect that for 6.5% for it to be a bit more full bodied than it is in terms of the mouthfeel. However, what I'm getting rushing through is like proper, like mango-y, pineapple-y, kind of tropical notes with a distinct kind of, I'm going to say funk to it. That is taking me, that's why I'm a wee bit confused with it being an oat, but it's really tasty. Like you say, I've had one mouthful of it, so you've probably had a chance to kind of dive in.
Yeah, I'm probably nearly half done the can, to be fair. I agree. It is actually a really nice beer. To be fair, with Project 7 stuff from Stuart, we hold that to a higher caliber, as it's something kind of a little bit more out there. and they take their time over it. Not saying that their other beers don't take any time over it. Obviously, they do, but Project 7 stuff is something a wee bit special. And yeah, I agree. The first thing I got with the beer is I was just wanting a wee bit more body from it. One, with it being an oat cream, and two, with it being 6.5%. I was...
It pours thicker than it drinks.
Yeah, no, I agree there. I definitely agree. That's my only gripe with this beer at the moment. And I say gripe, that's just me nitpicking, in fairness, like I said, because we hold Project 7 to a slightly higher standard. So, really nice beer. Really enjoying it. Looking forward to having a couple other cans. I appreciate Stuart getting in touch and sending those beers before the beers even release. So, thank you very much, Lewis, for getting in touch. In fact, he messaged yesterday and they arrived today. So, fair play.
I'm just reading it. So, fermented with some Kvik in there as well. So, that's maybe where the funk's coming from. Bright mango, passion fruit, grapefruit flavors. So, I wasn't far off on the whole tropical notes. Lovely.
Come on, I'm tempted. I'm tempted to have that one, that warm, to be honest.
Dare I say it, but that'd be quite an interesting cask pint, wouldn't it?
Which leads very well into, well, I assume our first topic of half pint ideas. Or your first one on the list.
First one is the modernization of cask beer. And the thinking behind this part is it having a positive or a negative effect on cask beer as a whole? So you can take that how you want. and the reason I brought it up is it's a topic that's cropped up in pubs quite a lot. Because dare I say it, there is a stereotypical person in a Scottish pub that drinks cask beer or has drank cask beer in the past. And what we've found in the last couple of years is that craft breweries are dabbling their toes into cask beer because this will lead on to another conversation another day, but it's another route to market. And it's probably an easier route to market than the keg stuff. And we're seeing far more hazy pails and even some craft lager. The traditional 80 shillings, 70 shillings, Scotch ales, stuff like that. But they've got modern craft beer twists to them. So... I'm just going to throw that at you and just get your.
I don't think it's a bad idea. I don't think it's a bad idea. I think the issue with cask and that disconnect between the drinker and the bar is it starts off for me when you think about it is the bartender behind the bar and the knowledge that the staff have with cask and making sure that they have that information where. They could make recommendations. They can say when someone asks, "What's this? What's that beer? What's that beer?" Blah blah blah. That they can make recommendations when someone goes, "I don't know what I want. I fancy something, a wee bit this, a wee bit that." All right, okay. From what you've said there, we've got this on cask, but also we've got this on keg. There's these two options. Let's maybe try the cask, and then like you'll have the keg option anyway. One thing I found. When you sent over kind of the guide to what you wanted to talk about tonight was last year, Green King, they have like a cask week or a cask month and they will give out knowledge packs to all the bars. So behind the tap, there'll be like a list of bingo words. You don't need to be a connoisseur of craft beer or cask beer at all, but you could just need to be able to read a fucking bit of paper that's stuck to the back of the pump. So if a drinker comes up and goes, I like it dark, I like it hazy, then they can go, yep, there's that. So whether it is a modernization of a beer or a traditional style, because that's what the thing that leads back to is, you don't want to lose how that, like, cask is just such a traditional style and it's embedded in culture that you don't want to lose too much of that tradition, I think.
Yeah. I think that's the first point that kind of crops up to me. The purists, the camera, the camera association has been going for years, decades, you know, millenniums
for some of them.
And it is the purists that
might turn their nose up a little bit
to the kind of the modernization of cask beer. But I do kind of agree what you're saying, that pubs and bartenders and barmaids and all the rest of it, people serving the beer, need the right training and understanding, not just about how a pint of cask is poured, but also how it's treated and how the cellar needs to be managed and all these sort of stuff, you know. So there is quite a lot to go into it. But for me, like, obviously because of the kind of the type of person that I am and we are, I suppose, as well, in terms of we like modern style beer, the chance to try some of the modern classics on cask. And as soon as I've said that, I'm guarantee you there's one beer that's coming to your mind. And
Manchester.
Correct. And it was just phenomenal. And for me, it's one of the purest sort of forms of the beer. And, you know, we talk about Keg's King. I still believe that. But cask is not far away, and being able to get the likes of, you know, Track Sonoma on cask, and, you know, we've had Long White Clouds from Tempest on cask, and stuff like that, where the technology advancements, I suppose, and the craftsmanship that goes into these beers is allowing the breweries to showcase what they do best in its most traditional form.
What's crazy about that whole weekend, obviously we're off at the Manchester Craft Beer Festival, that day and those pre-drinks that we had at Sure Shot and Track and Cloudwater, the one beer that I remember from those pre-drinks before the festival is Sonoma on Craft. That's the only one I can actually remember, because I was so giddy when we got into the tap room that I was going to get some Sonoma on cask. I was like, I felt like I'd won the craft beer lottery. It was just for a moment.
But that's it, and I suppose that's at the tap room, you know, where you're getting, you know, they're looking after it and all the rest of it. And I suppose it's maybe a slightly different when you hit, you know, a generic, you know, Green King pub. I'm just using Green King because you used them.
Yeah.
A generic pub, but dare I say it, the best pubs, and I'm focusing on Edinburgh for a reason, because it's, and there'll be people listening to this and they'll be shouting eventually, you know, Glasgow and York and, you know, down south, or I'm down south, up north, or Gav, the north of England maybe, has a tradition of cask beer that is unreal. But the really good pubs that do it have started. Don't get me wrong, there is still the, you know, traditional 80 or the 70 shilling or something like that that is on constantly, but it's creeping over. But the reason I kind of wanted to sort of bring that up, because I think we're both going to be singing on the same hymn sheet a little bit here in terms of we think that it's a good thing for the pubs, because it's given us more more chances to try the beer. And it's, but the one thing, like, here's my flip-flop devil's advocate aspect of it, is it turning the traditionalists off?
Well,
is it turning them away from the, you know, because the range that they're used to in terms of maybe an English bitter or you know, a stout, a 4%, or a wheat porter, or something like that. You know, you think of, I'm thinking of like Duker's IPA, I'm thinking of Abbott's Ale, I'm thinking of, up here, you know, you might get like Cali or Belhaven, yeah. You know, whatever, maybe not best, but you know, like the likes black on cask. But these, I'm going to say gentlemen.
I feel like you can't go too far with it. In terms of modernizing, can't go too far.
Well, but you say that, my point back to you is when we were at, I say we as the Royal, we were at the SIBA event in Edinburgh. We had New England IPAs on cask. Yeah. We had 7.5-8%, like, and I'm calling them Imperials, but on cask. And we've had, I know I've seen Harvest and Schiehallion Craft Lager on cask before, you know.
Saying that with the mind of, I like where it is, and I like that we're doing those things, but I am fearful that we lose, like I was saying, that tradition, and those traditional beers just get lost in the ether. And you walk in a bar and they've got 3 or 4 cask lines, one of them is a traditional and then the other ones are all these new age ones, modern cask ales, and they're going to get swept up before your traditional one is, and it's just going to be sitting there. There needs to be a balance, surely, and I get it for brewers and stuff, like they need to have another route to market, another revenue stream. I get it. And everyone's an individual business. I know it's a collaborative industry, but at the end of the day, it's a nitty gritty industry as well. Like, if you don't get that pump, somebody else is getting that pump. So you need to be doing something a wee bit different. So, yes, modernization is good, but I don't want to lose those traditional roots. And that's coming from someone like me who hasn't always liked cask ales. It's only the last like 2 years, 2.5 years where I'm like cask is awesome. Cask is bloody, bloody good. It's such a good way to enjoy a beer. Oh, room temperature beer. No, it's just fucking magic in a glass. Like,
when it's done properly, and it's
exactly when it's done properly, and the craftsmanship of doing a cask ale for me is, I mean, Christ, you've got people saying they've been lagering beers for 2 weeks or fucking 8 or whatever it is, 8 days. That's a nonsense to a man. Like, lagers need to be lagered properly, like a long time. So
the point,
cast stuff, look after it as well.
Yeah, the thing I'm like, we're coming back to on this is the fact that the traditionalists and the camera, the society, and the group, you know, they'll always be fighting for, you know, the purists. Now, part of when I've done some cast judging in the past, one of the criteria when you're looking at it, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, and I'll ping out. I was going to say, you can ping us a message, but is that cloudiness in cask beer is a huge no-no. And the reason for it is that it's naturally, because it's the yeast and everything's in the beer, and obviously it's still fermenting for the most part when it's in the beer as well. Mm-hmm. Like, because most of the time the breweries won't have finished its fermentation before it's packaged and it might be shipped off and ready to rock.
Yeah.
So that's why the beer needs to obviously sit for, you know, a day, 2 days before it gets poured. But cloudiness is a sign of it either being spoiled or there's something wrong or it's not been looked after. And that turns a lot of the traditionalists off. As soon as the pint gets poured, like, we've both worked in pubs, you know, you've seen it, like, when it's a, even when you pour a pint, you think, oh dear. But you kind of get away with that. You get away with that with the modern stuff because it's hazy beer for the most part that's in there. You know, they want the flavor from the yeast in there to create
That's part of their charm. That's part of what makes these breweries who they are. So it's a really tricky one. And I think that starts to blur the lines. And when it blurs the lines, my biggest concern of that is that people revert back to, well, what I know. And when you go to a bar, the cask is all too funky and weird stuff, right? What are they going back to?
They're going back to
Tennent's, or they're going back to Carlin. They're going back to Foster's, maybe. But you're going back to these core lagers that are on every bar across the country. That is, my dad used to drink with. That's what my dad drank. So I'm not a big fan, or maybe Belhaven Best or something like Cali Best, if you're or John Smith's, if you're below the border. I know John Smith's is big, but that's not the way forward either. Because I feel like that is, you know my thoughts on feeding the macro brands, but I want to try and deter as many people away from them as humanly possible. And this was part of one of the concerns that I wrote down myself, was that in the big picture of selling a couple of extra casks in the long run, it might turn people away from, or a select few, that because, and you again, I'm going off on a wee bit more of a, this is my Billy Connolly round part here, but you mentioned it saying you never really drank cask beer for the last couple of years. How many people of our age and younger will walk into the pub and the first thing they'll look for is the cask section? Probably quite few.
Very few.
So this is the point. So it's, and again, we were more, but it's a dying breed of people that go into the pub for cask. But if we're turning them away from it because we're putting modern beer on there, it might be a dying art. And when a pub's not going through too much cask beer, what happens? The beer becomes crap. Oh, it doesn't sit too long, and it has a negative impact. And then we're pushing people towards macro, and or maybe not obviously macro. You know, you might get a really good lager, or something that you're kind of which is local on a bar. But
can the other issue be as well? If you look at the likes of Wetherspoons, they'll push cask out at fucking £2, which is just crazy. Is that not also an issue and a thing having that? I don't see it as a positive thing. Like, Wetherspoon's pumping out cask beers for £2. Aye, you're getting a cheap pint. But does that mean the cask, that ale is going to be not so much hand? But we know what Wetherspoon's pubs are like, and I don't want to dive too deep into that. And we know how much they look after their beer. BS. Like you said, that as well will be a deterrent to people, for younger people who maybe want to try casting. Oh, this is £2. I'll get a go. Oh, this is nonsense. Oh, that's fucking minging. I'm no having cask ever again.
One thing about the Wetherspoons I will say that's positive is that they sell a shitload of beer. So when you're selling a shitload of beer, that at least there's a turnover on it. Yeah. You know, the issue about Wetherspoons that it goes far deeper is the price that they buy the beer from the brewers from, which makes it doesn't make it pointless because breweries when they do it, but at the same time it makes it very damn close to it. And
I think every Wetherspoons in Edinburgh has got Edinburgh Gold. Stuart's, isn't it? Is it Edinburgh
Gold? Probably.
I know the last time I looked, I've seen it like 3 or 4 times.
Oh, it is everywhere, and fair play to them, you know, for it. But they obviously take a hit on that. And again, this would be a really good topic with David from Spey Valley, because he would enlighten everybody quite a lot. And I would be kind of paraphrasing a wee bit, so I would be able to colour in round the edges. But that's one topic that I think would be quite interesting for. That might have to be a full pint ideas number. but
I totally agree with you, mate, in terms of, I think the modernization within the cask industry and where it sits, I think it allows breweries an opportunity to get access. So obviously I'm really focusing on Edinburgh because it's much easier for me to kind of relate to. But, you know, we've seen Moonwake dive into cask recently with a first cask beer. I've seen, you know, Campervan obviously do it. Obviously, Stuart, so we mentioned as well, they're all over the place. My old stomping ground in Broughton, you know, they've got a reputation of cask beer, and that's kind of what's built the brewery, you know, as well. And they pump loads of stuff in as well. So there's people that do it but focus solely on it. You know, it's my biggest concern is that we have an oversaturation within the cask market where it goes too crafty, that turns people away from, because the younger crowd aren't drinking as much, and when they are drinking, it is predominantly low alcohol stuff, which cask used to be,
I was going to say there, like your cask was always like 3-4, maybe 4% at best. Like it was never like your hard hitting 6s, 7s. Like it was always low ABV stuff, very subtle flavors coming through, no punching you in the face with the alcohol flavor, which you couldn't anyway because it was low ABV anyway. So but it was craftsmanship.
See, that's the bit. It's just the bit I'm kind of I'm humming on over when we were talking. Like when I kind of scribbled this down, that's why I thought it'll be quite an interesting topic that is a first intro, because people might just think you're kind of waffling here about cask, but at the same time, if you're brought up anywhere in Scotland, it is everywhere, and if you're brought up anywhere in the north of England, it's everywhere, and even in London now, you're seeing far more places with proper cask beer. And you've mentioned it a couple of times in pubs down your neck of the woods, Gav, that, you know, you're getting, we were in Brighton, we had a couple of pints.
The last standout cask I had was here's your modernization of cask. It was a Beak and Daya collaboration that I had in the Beak tap room. This was last summer. So there's your fucking modernization of cask beer. Like, I mean, by jings, too. Proper craft beer, like upper echelon, top tier breweries coming together and making a cask beer. Going back to it was nothing crazy. It was just I think 4.8% IPA, nothing mental. Lovely, fucking lovely. Sitting in the sun, perfect.
See, that's
absolutely perfect.
But the one thing this is going to do. As well, and again, here's me back, I'm flipping again. So, but this is one thing that it is going to do is the quality that these breweries are able to produce and deliver at a cost that is, whether it's reasonable or not, again, I don't know what a Beak Daya cask, like what a 9-gallon firkin would cost, to be fair. But at the same time, what that's then really going to do is going to step up the other breweries, because I know for the likes of Fine Ales up here, Yarrow, right? It's an absolute doll wort of a cask beer. And that was tweaked to ensure that it was, when they were doing the re-recipe and change for the big 440 cans and that was maintaining the full flavour that they could pack into it for cask. You know, you think about the Oakham's Citra, that's a stalwart. It's everywhere as well. That's only 3.5%. But that's another one that has got full, like it's got a full flavour in terms of for what it is. Like it's still 3.5% compared to modern pale ales. Obviously, these are like there's no comparison, but that's where the quality of the beers that are coming in to the cask market
is
so I know, like, going to push this. I know what we were saying, like, I was saying, like, we're scared to lose the tradition, right? If we've got breweries that are doing it right, doing it properly, and even at these low ABV levels where cask should be sitting, like, cask for me, all like anything above 5.5 shouldn't really be a cask beer. I'm probably not going to try it. I might have a wee bit of somebody else's, but I would more lean towards a keg beer if it's going to be something like that ABV. But something below 5, that at least sticks to a kind of wee bit of the tradition instead of it being a lower ABV beer. Nothing too mental. If crafty breweries like Beak, like Deer, can do these properly, surely that side of the modernization of cask beer can only be helpful, because then you've got the young team that are coming in who, like you said, we are, even the generation before us, like, I didn't drink a lot of cask. I've only started it, and it was, I seen it as an old man thing just about. No, we're becoming the old men that are drinking the cask stuff. So if there's, which is probably, and there's probably an aspect to it as well. But if we can introduce it at a younger age where they see these big boy, the Diaz and stuff, seeing doing them cask stuff, they'll give it a go and go, fuck, that's actually quite good. Like, yeah. Then the next bar they're in might not be the same beer, but they'll see a cask one, I'll get a go. Like, yes, the flip side of it is I'd find it hard for some to see a young, I think it'd be harder for a younger person to go, oh, I'll have a day and then go somewhere and have like a Citra or have like a traditional cask ale. They'll be like, oh, like, I've seen my dad drink that. Why would I drink that? I've seen my granddad drink that. That was shite when I had it. But you never know. It might just stimulate them to go, I'll get a fucking go.
But
it's a hard question, but at the same time, like, I've grown to love cask. So for someone like me who never had an interest in cask beers or dark beers for that instance, I would quite happily pick up a porter on cask nowadays.
Well, that's like, and I know that's, we're kind of going through it's the sort of the roller coaster of the drinking culture, isn't it? In terms of,
you know, everybody's palate changing.
What's going to last? Like, what's going to last is a fucking stupid, mental, like, sour that has mental bubbles and pops. Is what's going to fucking last? That piece of shit or a good traditional cask beer? Oh. I know what I'm picking.
Well, the cask beer's
going to last.
The cask beer's been there for donkeys. It's been there since day dot. It's the traditional, you know, it's the most basic and most traditional way.
Fired up at cask here.
But that's it. And that was kind of the whole point. Like, cause I feel like there's a section of the market that, one, it gets overlooked because it's cans and keg. Let's really be honest. When we're talking on the podcast every week, we're not talking about the cask beer we've tried.
Well, it might get mentioned now and again, but, you know, and again, that's the part of this this whole kind of segment that we're talking about is to get people thinking differently about what they're drinking, how they're drinking, where they're drinking.
And for me, like, going to the pub and trying something that's on cask that, I would never say, like, I would never have, when we were out before, I would never have went into the pub and went, Gav, there's a 80 shilling on cask, you should give it a try, because, you know, now you might drink it, but back then you probably wouldn't have.
Go fuck yourself.
But that's it, you know, you've been like, nah, give me a Foster's, mate. But the fact is that there's the variant of beers now that are available is, it's becoming, that's what I'm saying, but we need to push people down that route to go and try it and drink it. It isn't for, the beers that are on there now aren't the old man beers. There's some pubs will still do that and they won't move away. Like, I was in a pub today that had two 80 shillings on cask. There's only two casks they had, both 80 shillings. And, you know, they'll have some weird and wonderful stuff, but today they didn't, and it was as simple as that. But I think it was, to be fair.
I have just written down that I'm going to commit the podcast, the full podcast, which is available on all major podcast platforms, just search Beerfish Podcast. We're going to do a cask week, like, or 2 weeks.
I'm off just of
focus. Like, I'm sure there's like an international cask week thing. I'm in. We're in it.
And I think the styles of beer in there are not just, like you say, they're not focused at the traditional cask drinkers. No. They're focused in at the likes of us, even, you know, people that enjoy a beer that are, that might not, like, you know, picking someone keg is sometimes really difficult, whereas you see a funky bag.
Something just popped in my head there, is we've said it a couple of times. Traditional drinkers, right? Your traditional cask drinkers. We, as soon as we say that, we're thinking it's people over the age of 65 or 60, whatever, right? But we were thinking that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, or when before we even started the podcast.
Yeah,
that generation, some of that has been and gone. We're getting older. It's everything's we're catching up with that number. It's a, like, for me, again, I'm all for fucking this modernization of cask, because it's comes from a point of that age. We're coming up to that fucking age where we think it's an old man's drink. So, like, modernizing it makes perfect sense, because, well, you guys, yourself, Miguel, and you have been drinking fucking Sierra Nevada since university, which was, what, 10 years ago, 15 years ago? So, so, like, long time. So that's where it's like, okay, they've got to a stage where, in fact, it's not even a stage. It was reported, obviously, cask sales just before COVID were fucking going down anyway. Obviously, COVID, they disappeared. So how are we going to make it? How are we going to make it cool again? Fucking modernize it. It makes perfect sense. I'm going round in my own argument here, to be fair.
No, I know.
It makes perfect sense.
I think we need to, and that was the main talking point for me, was is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Now, us, I think we're both saying we're quite happy that we're both in the, it's definitely a good thing, because it's opening up opportunities.
Don't lose the tradition, that's all.
But I do think we need to, you know, you need to ensure that the guys that have, I keep saying guys, but because it's predominantly guys that used to drink cask beer, but the guys and the girls that used to drink or still do drink cask all the time, that are, there is always something. And I think having the flexibility now to have a couple of modern lines and a couple of traditional lines is key. The other thing, just on a quick note, is that the price point needs to reflect that too. Like, it is cheaper to make cask. I know there's still a boatload of hops and all the rest of it that go in to this modern stuff. But put it at a price point that allows people to try it. And the great thing, wherever you are in the country, one of the greatest things you can do when you're in a pub, especially that has cask beer, is ask to taste the beer. Because every pub that has pours cask will give you a sample. And if they've got 20 lines, taste all 20 lines. Because it's no frowned upon, I promise you. Like, trust me.
It's been quite normal. Quite normal.
Yeah. But it's the great way of getting it. And I know a taste isn't the same as a half pint or a full pint, but at the same time, it allows you to kind of get your taste buds around, you know, it isn't as carbed, you know. And one of the topics that we're going to tackle on this in a couple of weeks is keg versus cask, because I think it's important that we break down the differences. And I say, like, if you've listened this far, we've kind of went a wee bit over where I was aiming. We're looking for about a half an hour mark, but we've kind of snuck over a little bit here. But if you think that we're up fool's gold here a little bit, then let us know. I did create a quick Twitter account
I believe, and I'm just going to double check before I shout it out on here.
What's Twitter? That's how old you are.
Is it X now? Is that what it is?
X
gone gear to you. It's on there. I need to change the pick on it. So once I get Gav to do some funky when he gets his artwork, I'll ping it up there. But it's on Twitter. Obviously, you can follow on the podcast stuff as well, and Instagram and Facebook and all the usual stuff. But I did create a Twitter handle, so I'm just going to start throwing some weird stuff up here, and it's at Half Pint Ideas. It's as simple as that, and I'll put the podcast pick on it. But if there's anything stupid that comes up or whatever, please just ping us a message, because I think it's really important that we look into all these weird questions.
No, definitely. That's the idea behind Half Pint Ideas, presented by the Beer Fridge Podcast. A bit more in-depth chats into more specific topics. Like Mark said, we're going to get some people on from in the industry to ask those questions, and more industry-based questions other than what beer have you got coming out next week, which we do in the main podcast, which you can go and follow on all major platforms. Just search Beer Fridge Podcast. That's been good fun. I enjoyed that.
There's so many of these wee topics that, and what we'll do is we'll incorporate these conversations into our down weeks into the podcast as well. Because there's going to be weeks where it'll be like the two of us, there'll be people, there'll be other guests on, there'll be the other boys that will join, you know, when we've got stuff on. Wanted to kind of get the ball rolling, because I've probably spoke to you about this for a good month or something like that.
Good month,
I just kind of was like, right, let's get the thing in. And I've got a couple, like you say, I've got a couple of beer influencers that are definitely game, but they were supposed to join but couldn't commit to today. So if you've listened this far and you're one of those people, you know you want to get involved. So let's do it.
Get involved by all means, like Mark says, head over to X and that Twitter handle. Oh, fuck, it's not a Twitter. Head over to X and go to that Twitter. What a melt. Head over to X.
Just shout out the beer. Just go to Instagram and Facebook and all the rest of it. It's all there. So it's all good.
It'll all be there. Until next time, like I said, this is a YouTube exclusive series, and it'll be available on early access on our Patreon page, patreon.com/beerfridgepodcast, to show your official support and get access to that nice and early. For myself, Gavin, and Mark, until next time on Half Pint Ideas, presented by the Beer Fridge Podcast. Goodbye.